Welcome to the Life Course. For those who are here for the first time, I know there are some of you. My name is John, and I sort of give the presentations week by week. Just to let you know what happens, we serve food between 7 and now, and then I drone on for a while, break coffee, alcohol, take it into small groups, chit-chat, and basically ends about 9:15, something like that. And this is an 8-week course. This is the third week. If you want to download ones that you weren't able to be here for, you can do that. And the course is really about the question of meaning. And we've been considering quite general things. We'll consider something a bit more specific tonight. amazingly, there's a weekend away as an optional part of this course. And I know. And it's in a sort of hotel in Eastbourne, right on the front. Eastbourne is a nice place to go and die, and it's quite a pretty sort of beachfront, and that's about it. But the hotel is functional, and what happens on the weekend is we go down Friday night, chill out in the bar. Saturday morning, session one, like this, meeting small groups, as you're going to later. Various optional afternoon activities, from charity shop shopping to some kind of sporting thing, to some kind of watching sporting thing, to some kind of other thing. We'll think of fun things that you either do or don't do. And then session two, and then in the evening, it is a... Well, last evening was a space-themed karaoke quiz competition. And so people really went in for that and came as various space creatures. And it was a lot of fun. We always try to find something a bit like that, and we'll be doing that again. But we haven't decided exactly what to do. And Conky, have you decided what we're doing? Okay. good. So it costs £80, but we don't want anybody not to come because they can't afford to come. And we offer a bursary of £50, so if you can't come but you'd like to, just let your leaders know, talk to them. thank you, those who've been inviting your friends. You could probably do one more week of that, and then it might seem a little bit attenuated from where we are now, I would say. As always, I recommend a couple of books. This is a classic, Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. This is his exploration of faith. And this is Philip Yancey, The Jesus I Never Knew, a truly terrible experience of the church. And this is him trying to process it. Okay. So last week we considered philosopher Isaiah Berlin's idea that human convictions can be grouped into three categories. First of all, those that can be established through empirical observation, in other words, by the natural sciences. Those that can be established by logic and mathematics. And those that cannot be proved in either of these ways, but which might be taken to be actually quite important. And I argued that the question, is there an ultimate meaning to life, can't be assessed scientifically or mathematically. Convictions about our meaning fit into this third category, as do convictions about the importance of freedom of speech or democracy, that kind of thing. So the atheist conviction that there is no ultimate meaning to life fits into this category as a belief and not as a scientific fact, as does the theist conviction that there is an ultimate meaning to life. So can religion help us? We spent a lot of time looking at that last week. Can religion do what it claims to do and answer the question, is there an ultimate meaning to life? And I suggested that despite the good things that have been done by religious people throughout history, it is generally better to avoid religion like the plague. Religion depends on our conception of what is spiritual, on our effort, encourages those who might think of themselves as being higher up the sort of ladder towards God or the divine or whatever, to look down on those who are lower on the ladder and who aren't quite cutting it in terms of moral and spiritual performance. It's not surprising, as far as I'm concerned, that religious people have often been violent, but because they believe that they're right, and the religions teach that they are right, and that other convictions are therefore wrong, and it's therefore not surprising that people being people, that has led to conflict throughout history. Ultimately, as far as I'm concerned, a religious definition of meaning fails us because it's all about us. Now, at the end of the last session, I suggested an alternative that is the subject of this week. And the alternative was this. What if the meaning of life is not about science, philosophy, or religion? What if it's not limited to us, our intellect, our inquiry, our effort? What if the meaning of life has been made known in a person? Now, throughout history, we have hailed figures as messiahs, supermen, superwomen, We've elevated them to a level above the norm and looked to them to answer the world's problems. Some have been even regarded as gods by their devotees. From fictional ones like Luke Skywalker to real ones like Mahatma Gandhi to wildly underqualified ones like Bono. We seem to enjoy the idea of there being someone or some people who exist on a higher plane from the rest of us, superhumans who can bring hope and maybe make sense of the human condition, special ones who are powerful enough to transcend the negative elements of human experience. So, do you remember how hugely excited people were when Barack Obama was elected president? And, leaving aside the historical landmark of the first black president, there was a huge level of excitement. So normally, rational human being Spike Lee said, when Obama is elected, it will change everything. You'll have to measure time by before Obama and after Obama. It's an exciting time to be alive now. Everything is going to be affected, wait for it, by this seismic change in the universe. Now, I know... Whatever you think of Obama, I'm not sure he's affected the seismic change in the universe, but you can let me know if you think he has. Anyway, tonight we're going to concentrate on one particular messianic figure, Jesus of Nazareth. Not least because it's difficult to find anyone, living or dead, who has had or who continues to have such a great impact on our history. We date our calendar by him. Nearly everybody's heard of him. Millions follow him. H.G. Wells said of him, "I'm a historian. I'm not a believer. I must confess, as a historian, that the penniless preacher from Nazareth is irrevocably the very center of history. Jesus Christ is easily the most dominant figure in all history." And yet, in this country, people don't know much about Jesus, in my general experience. And I would like to attribute that entirely to the magnificent efforts of the church in this land. But people don't really know that much about him, and consequently haven't really thought that much about him, again, in my experience. And where they have, they hold very different opinions about him. Some think that Jesus didn't really exist, but we should still tell our children about him at Christmas because he's part of the season. You know, he's a Christmas tradition, like turkey and presents and hangovers and arguments and uncontrollable spiraling debt. Others think of Jesus as being like an effeminate girly man. You know, he wouldn't have been much use in a fight. He'd probably talk with a lisp. And if he'd thrown a ball, it'd been a bit like this. You know, he's more concerned with rabbits and unicorns than real life. Some people are open-minded about him, have never really considered his life or his claims, and that might be a reason why they're here. Others react in what is often a quite an uncharacteristically aggressive manner whenever Jesus is mentioned, and they want to shut the conversation down as quickly as possible. And, of course, that amounts to a more negative opinion of him. Some people have wanted to claim Jesus as a spokesperson for the spiritual or social agendas of their day. In the 60s, Jesus was taken to be a revolutionary leader of the poor, like Che Guevara. I met somebody on the course a few years ago who honestly thought Jesus was obviously an alien and sent from outer space. But in our day, Jesus is generally adopted as a kind of wise philosopher, writer, and guru figure. He's seen as a kind of new age teacher of enlightenment with some politically correct things to say about tolerance. I'd just like to say that I did a degree in theology at Oxford, so I am going to skate over one or two things. I am confident for reasons of integrity that when I make historical statements, I can back them up. You don't have to accept my word, but I can refer you to books if you want to check out what I've said, or the internet. So just to start with, by every historical test known to us, Jesus of Nazareth definitely existed. There are no historians who dispute this, just so you know. In addition to the multitude of early Christian sources we have, the basic facts about Jesus' life, including his death under Roman governor Pontius Pilate and the claim that he was raised from the dead, are recorded in Jewish Roman histories as well and are confirmed by archaeology, these particular convictions and these facts. The basic facts about his life are not in dispute, but who was he, what did he do, and why has there always been such a huge fuss made about him? It seems that even those with no interest in Christianity, or even an active dislike for Christianity, have still been enthralled by the figure of Jesus. Mick Jagger said, "I do not like the church. The church does more harm than good, but Jesus Christ was fantastic." Mike Tyson, boxer and doyen of critical thinking, said, "I'm a Muslim, but I think Jesus would have a drink with me," which really, from a Muslim, he would be cool. He would talk to me. Vincent van Gogh, "I am no friend of present-day Christianity, but its founder was sublime." As I said last week, despite rejecting the church, myself, and religion in general, I always retained an affection for Jesus. I found him fascinating and disturbing. I learned a bit about him in Sunday school, not very much, more when I did religious studies at O-level, which was a study of the lives of Jesus, the four lives of Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But I tried not to think about him, and particularly the things I found uncomfortable. If I was pushed, then I would say, like most people, I would have put Jesus in the good moral teacher category of human beings. he was naive, ultimately failed hero who died on a cross. He was someone who bucked social and religious trends and had a deep concern for the poor, but he was brought down by those he criticized, like so many others. End of story. That's how I would have seen him. The accounts of his life, written by those who knew him, make it clear that Jesus of Nazareth was a normal human being, just like everybody else. He, like Muhammad, Gandhi, Buddha, you, me, displayed the normal range of human characteristics. He ate, he drank, he got tired, he slept, he walked, he talked, he cried, he got angry, he cared, he loved, he taught, he made friends. He was thoroughly normal. Christians have always believed, however, that he was something more than a man. They've always known Jesus was a man, but they've claimed that he was the Son of God. The question is why? Well, I suppose one obvious answer, which we can't possibly ignore, is that Christians are deluded. Whether because they're simpletons who've been duped by some humongous whopper, or are emotional retards who need a Jesus crutch to hold them up in life, Christians are basically people who haven't got it in to accept that Jesus was, whilst clearly exceptional, no more than a human being. And this is what I thought. I used to look at the Christians, or some of the Christians I knew, and I would think, that one's a bit naive. That one's a bit mentally unstable. That one will never get a girlfriend. That one has been so controlled by his Christian family, and he's had beliefs thrust upon him, and it would be impossible for him to think for himself. He would never reject the whole thing, even if he wanted to. It would be too painful. They all have their reasons for wanting or needing Jesus to be God. It makes sense of their lives. But unfortunately, that doesn't mean Jesus is God any more than just because I want or need £1 billion, I'll become a billionaire. And yet, of course, on the other hand, there have been thousands of intelligent, sometimes highly intelligent, stable, normal people who've believed in the divinity of Jesus. From Augustine to Isaac Newton, William Wilberforce to Michael Faraday, Louis Pasteur to J.R. Tolkien, Blaise Pascal to C.S. Lewis, etc. And there have been countless highly intelligent people who've become convinced of Jesus' divinity. So how could this be? And now, this was one of the things I found difficult when I started investigating Christian claims for myself. I kept on meeting Christians who didn't fit into the naive, stupid category. And they really worried and drew me at the same time. I didn't know what to do with them. Christians have always claimed Jesus was and is the Son of God. The question is why? Well, I suppose another possible answer is because Jesus was deluded. So this isn't the delusion of Christians, it's the delusion of Jesus. He made it up. That's it. I've turned the page too quickly. Now, this is the position of Richard Dawkins. Dawkins is, in fact, quite a fan of Jesus. He likes much of what he said and did. But Dawkins thinks that ultimately, when it comes to talk of divinity and the supernatural, Jesus was obviously talking out of his bottom. Dawkins says this: I think we owe Jesus the honor of separating his genuinely original and radical ethics from the supernatural nonsense, which he inevitably espoused as a man of his time. So Jesus produces original ethics, but the supernatural stuff is obviously generated by Jesus just to fit in with the kind of expectations of the day. So Dawkins is asking us to accept that Jesus was capable of teaching radical and original ethics, willing to upset the established religious and political order, even if that would lead to his death. In fact, despite the fact that Jesus lived his life pretty much unhindered by conventions or cultural norms in a way that was astonishingly free, he just wasn't capable of disconnecting himself from the supernatural expectations of his time. And these apparently, according to Dawkins, amounted to, whatever else you do or say, could you please be a bit supernatural? So he was compelled to throw in some silliness about being the Son of God, because that's what you did back then. It's what people expected. Well, really, this view owes more, without wanting to be rude, it owes more to Dawkins' credulity and lack of basic historical knowledge than anything else. The simple reality is that no other figures in the history of Israel, and Jesus was, of course, Jewish, made himself out to be equal with God. There is no one that has done that. In fact, that would be a blasphemous thing to do. And because Israel believed there was only one God, it made them unique in the ancient Near East. Israel believed in one God. So it simply wasn't what you did back then to throw in a bit of God talk. Let's consider the Jesus problem. I had the Jesus problem, and now I'm giving it to you. This is the Jesus problem, ladies and gentlemen. May it disturb and delight you as it has me. Has anybody displayed a character comparable to the character of Jesus? If you don't know, it might be worth reading one of the lives of Jesus for yourself and seeing what you think. See how you interact with this person. What sense do you make of this man? That was the big question of Jesus' day, and it has been a big question ever since. Has anybody ever appeared to be more at home in their own skin? So free from contradictions, free from the pressures of outside influence, so entirely and completely himself. Is this kind of person the kind of person who would throw in some gobbledygook supernatural hogwash that he didn't believe simply because that's what people of the time expected, even though actually they didn't? That doesn't make much sense to me, if I'm being honest. Albert Einstein said, "I am a Jew, but I am enthralled by the luminous figure of the Nazarene. No one could read the Gospels without feeling the actual presence of Jesus. His personality pulsates in every word. No myth is filled with such life." And I just want to say this to you. If Jesus was a mythical creation, you've got to ask yourself the question, who on earth had the capacity to invent him? It's worth asking this. To think this. It might take more than a Jesus to invent a Jesus. Just think about that. There is no Jesus problem when it comes to his human qualities, obviously. There are no issues to discuss. We admire his teaching. Love your neighbor as yourself, right? Nothing not to like there. We like his ethics. Turn the other cheek. Bless those who persecute you, right? Pretty cool. We like the time spent with outcasts. Surely we should be doing that. We don't do that, but surely we should be doing that. We like the altruism. We're very happy with Jesus when it comes to the amazing human life he displays. He gives us something perhaps to aspire to. It's all good. The problem comes when the other stuff creeps in. When it's claimed he did miracles, when he starts forgiving people's sins, when he talks about himself as being one and the same as God, when he tells people he's the way to God, when he offers eternal life, whatever that is, to people. Why did you do that, Jesus? You had to go and mess it all up, didn't you? Couldn't you just have been a nice, normal guy? Why did you have to go and be a bit mental? Silly Jesus, he's not the Messiah, he's just a very naughty boy. This is the heart of the Jesus problem. The historical Jesus really did make himself out to be equal with God. He really did. Repeatedly, in word and deed. Yes, he was a human being just like you and me, but he also claimed to be much more. The general public can heap ludicrous expectations on their messiahs, can't they? But no messianic figure has made the claims about his identity that Jesus made about himself. Rarely, if ever, do the people we elevate claim to be more than a sincere person trying to do their bit. And the best of them are usually fully aware of their own frailty. Mahatma Gandhi said, "It's unwise to be too sure of one's own wisdom. It's healthy to be reminded that the strongest might weaken and the wisest might err." Buddha said, "I die seeking the truth. Not finding it, not owning it, but seeking it." Muhammad said, "I am a prophet of God. Not God himself, not the same as God, not more than a human, simply a servant of God." And David Beckham said, "My parents have always been there for me ever since I was 7. I love David. You've got to love David, right? Messianic figures come and go. But the one thing that unites them is their humanity. Either they prove it themselves or it's proved for them. None of them is perfect. They don't claim to be perfect. They're just like you and me. We have this in common, apart from Jesus of Nazareth, who said, "Which one of you can convict me of any sin?" He claims to be without any wrongdoing. This is quite shocking. Who does that? Christians have always believed he was something more. They've always known Jesus was a man, but are convinced that he was and is the Son of God. The question is why? Well, what if the answer to that question is that this conviction best explains the evidence that we have? What if Jesus' divinity best explains the quality of his life? What if that's just the answer? After all, if God were to reveal himself, what do you think he might look like? Can I suggest he might look a bit like Jesus of Nazareth? So he would be above it all, free from material, political, societal power, free from the influence of money and status. Jesus really pissed off the religious authorities of his time. Why? Because he spent his time with the irreligious, those whom religious society had excluded, lepers, the poor, tax collectors. He sought out the morally and the religiously unclean. And he even, can you imagine this, talked with women. Some women were even his friends, and some of them were even really tarty. He went where he wanted to. He did what he wanted to. He spoke about what he wanted to with the people he wanted to, and he had no regard for the societal or religious norms of the day. He rebelled against the system. But he didn't do it. He didn't do it in a teenage angsty, it's more about me showing the world how rebellious I can be in order to make myself feel good and cool and respected. But it doesn't actually really matter what I'm actually rebelling about. It just matters that I'm kind of rebelling. He didn't do it in that kind of way. Because Jesus clearly stood for something. He wasn't self-obsessed. He was free. If God were to reveal himself, what do you think he might look like? I suggest he might look a bit like Jesus of Nazareth. If God were to reveal himself, would he not be unquestionably authoritative? When Jesus spoke, the most common reaction to his speaking was, he spoke as one who had authority. People noted that whether they were friends or foes. Here is a man with a message and a purpose and a drive, at times direct, almost to the point of rudeness. He says these sorts of things. I am the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody comes to the Father except through me. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. Even if you die, if you believe in me, you will live. He says, he commands people to pray in his name. He says, whatever you do to me, you do to God. He says that whoever listens to his teaching and obeys him is wise. He says, I am the bread of life. Anyone who comes to me will never go hungry. He says, come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Jesus knew exactly what he stood for. He knew exactly what he wanted to say. He didn't hold back in saying it. He was unquestionably authoritative, and he wasn't a bastard. He wasn't judgmental. He didn't belittle. He didn't ostracize or condemn. He just had undeniable authority. If God were to reveal himself, what do you think he would look like? Can I suggest he might look a bit like Jesus of Nazareth? Can I suggest if God were to make himself known, he would be astonishingly kind? Has there ever been a more caring person than Jesus, who looks on everyone, irrespective of where they've come from, where they're going to, irrespective of their belief or lack of belief, and loves them? The kind of person who would notice you, with all your good and bad, all your bruises and imperfections, your beauty and your hurt, your strength and your weakness, and tell you that he loves you for who you are. And offer to take away the pain. Just imagine this. This is horrible. I'm going to do it to you anyway. Imagine this. Imagine you got totally pissed. And you've got home, and basically you just managed to get your key into the door, and you know we're about to vomit any moment now. So basically you get the door open, you're stumbling through the door, and there is Jesus. He's standing there, right? And I mean, you don't really know what to do, but it doesn't really matter. You're just going to be sick. There isn't time to get to the bathroom. You're just sick. On his sandals, on the hem of his robe, everywhere in the doorway. Oh, you know, what would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? This is what I think Jesus would do. You know, help to clean you up, ensure that you got to bed, be there the next day and ask you this question. Where does it hurt? Where does it hurt? I would say that's the question that Jesus asks all of us, because he can heal it. Astonishingly kind. Has there ever been a person more devoted to the people than Jesus? The true servant gave himself up for others, even those who hated him. Perfectly kind, but he wasn't weak. Finally, can I suggest if Jesus was to make himself known, he would be undeniably powerful. If God was to make himself known, he would be undeniably powerful. According to the Gospels, Jesus fed 5,000 people from some bits of bread and fish. He walked on water. He calmed a storm with a word. He had extraordinary supernatural power to heal the sick, free people from evil, raise the dead. Wherever Jesus went, huge crowds followed him. It's true to say that in the Gospels, Jesus is either in the process of doing something miraculous, having just done something miraculous, or about to do something miraculous. He also regularly forgave people's sins, which at the time, in the context, could only be a claim to divinity, because God alone could forgive sins in a Jewish context. He offered people life in all its fullness. He promised life after death. We are told he came back from the dead. Who has the power to do that? If God were to reveal himself, would he not look a little bit like this person? Self-confident but not self-related, driven but not detached, gentle but not weak, free but not feckless, powerful but not oppressive, kind but not codependent. He was a leader but he wasn't a dictator. He was a servant but not a submissive. No one before or since has affected human history as much as this one man. Why is that? Well, possibly because he is who he says he is, God the Son. Fully human, of course, but also fully divine. I'm having serious trouble ordering this talk. Okay, we've done that. All right. In him, we see the way life should be lived. Wouldn't it be great, people say, if everybody lived according to the Sermon on the Mount? Well, if everybody lived according to the Sermon on the Mount, everybody would be happy. We should just live according to the Sermon on the Mount. I want you to know, theologically, Jesus did not think anyone could live according to the Sermon on the Mount. What he was doing was translating his own life into words. That's the whole point. Jesus says, when he says, be perfect, just like my Father in heaven is perfect, you honestly thought he's looking around his ragtag, bobble-belled group of useless disciples and thinking they're going to be perfect anytime soon. What he's saying is, this is me. I'm putting my life into words for you to see how far removed you are from me. I suggest that he alone has actually lived this life. He is the archetypal human, but more than this, the Son of God. It explains why he said, if you see me, you've seen the Father. I and the Father are one. He is God revealed to the world once and for all time. He is the meaning of life. And his offer is that we can experience the meaning of life through a relationship with him. So it's only week three. But he claims to be the answer to our question. What is the meaning of life? But for us to, in any way, come to a conviction that this might be true, we are going to, if we are normal, we're going to need some very serious proof. This is important stuff, life-changing stuff, God stuff, supernatural stuff, meaning of life stuff. We need some hard evidence to be convinced that what I've described to you is actually true. And also, if God did reveal himself in Jesus, what did he do it for? Why did he bother? How on earth can we experience a relationship with Jesus? You can't see him, you can't touch him. How can you experience a relationship with him? These are important questions that make up the subject of the next couple of weeks' talks, where we have time to delve a bit deeper. But for now, can I ask, what is your response to the person of Jesus? All over the world, throughout history, we have sought meaning, with or without God. We search for it in religion, in science, in atheism, pluralism, philosophy, anywhere, everywhere. It's what we do. But what if the search didn't rely on us? What if it relied on God? What if true meaning came in search of us? What if God revealed himself to us in human terms, terms that we can understand? Imagine that you, for whatever reason, wanted to communicate with a colony of ants. Perhaps the most authentic way to do that would be to become one. What if God has done that? Just a slob like one of us, you know, trying to make his way home on the bus, whatever the rest of the words are. Napoleon Bonaparte said, I know men, and I tell you that Jesus Christ is no mere man. Between him and every other person in the world, there is no possible term of comparison. Alexander, Caesar, Charlemagne, and I founded empires, but on what do we rest the creation of our genius? He's a humble guy, isn't he? Upon force. Jesus Christ founded his empire upon love, and at this hour, millions of people would die for him. Jesus was a nobody. He came from a nowhere village in a backwater of the Roman Empire. He never wrote a book. He never held a position in public life. It's not really clear he owned that many clothes. He was crucified between two thieves when his best friends ran away and left him. And yet no other person has affected human history as much as this one man. What do you make of Jesus? This is the question we'll begin our small group discussion with in a moment. But of course, for now, essential caffeine is being provided.